Welcome to Talks Around a Farm Table, a podcast about the diverse landscape of agriculture on Kodiak Island. This series is driven by Kodiak Soil Water Conservation District in collaboration with KMXD Radio. I am your host, Ian Zacher. Hello, ag enthusiasts. Welcome to another episode of Talks Around a Farm Table. Today, we delve into food systems and food production. Kodiak being difficult to build both. Today's guests are no strangers to this difficult task. We talk about what is being done to build a food network and system for Kodiak and how food is connecting and building Kodiak's villages and island as a whole. I've got Max here with Callie, Kodiak Archipelago Learning Institute, who's going to regale us about his very interesting job title that he's given himself here, Sustainable Food Systems Catalyst, which is fitting but also particularly interesting. So,
Jump in and pass it over to you then after Joe. I'll just clarify too, Kodiak Leadership Institute.
Oh, sorry.
We help.
Learning Institute. Teaching. Yeah, I always mess it it's up. Sorry about that.
No, it's all good. Just in case people are looking it up or looking for resources. I joined Cali about 3 years ago, and I've been serving as the Sustainable Food Systems Catalyst, so I get to help out with our different food programmatic areas, including, soil farming, of course, and high tunnels and some hydroponics as well, and then the emerging mariculture industry up here and doing some kelp farmer training and starting to dabble with oysters as well. And that's how I got to know Joe, through helping out the village farms around the region. And we actually recently hired Joe on as a sustainable food systems technician. So helping me out with a lot of the work that I do and with the community outreach and different projects and workshops we're doing. So I'll pass it to you, Joe, to talk a little bit about more how you got here and got involved.
Alrighty, sounds good. Thanks, Max. I'm Joe Kewen, born and raised here on Kodiak, raised here out in Port Lions. After high school, I decided to take on the journey of farming and decided to join the team here in Port Lions. They were just starting the farm back in 2016. Did some farming for 8 years, and then I was fortunate enough to join the Cali team with Max. And as he mentioned, I'm the sustainable food systems technician, and I'm very happy to be here.
Oh, thank you guys for showing up. This is wonderful. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. So, Max, you can tell me a little bit. You said 3 years ago. You started as an intern before you came onto Cali, right? You started out in Port, Larsen Bay, right?
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little bit of background of Cali and what drew you to intern at the village farms?
Yeah, well, it's a funny story. It was kind of just chance and luck. I was at the right place at the right time, really. I think the summer of COVID was made by 2020, actually, almost 5 years ago. Ended up in Larsen Bay through a connection of a friend. I went out there for a summer just to check it out and help get a charter fishing lodge going. And while I was there, I mentioned that I had been interested in local food production. Was originally dabbling with aquaponics at the university. And so wanted to put my feelers out there and see if anything was happening. And the guy who I was working with in Larsen Bay said I should go reach out to the local farm there in town that they had a lot of cool projects going on, and there was a big movement right now to increase local food production. So went up there and met Sam Knoyer, the farm manager, and just really started helping out, volunteering some time when I could and I wasn't building the lodge. And from there, then he offered me an internship the next year, and the lodge asked if I wanted to be the cook. So that kind of tied those two together nicely, and clients would go out and catch fresh food, and then I'd be growing at the garden and have some fresh veggies to add to the meal. And that's how I got connected with Cali too, and the executive director, Robbie Townsend-Vennell, and all the projects they were doing. And unique opportunity opened up for the next summer to where the person who was in my position was actually leaving the island. So she called up and asked if I wanted a position, and been here ever since. So it's kind of just one summer, about 5 years ago now, has turned into coming up on 4 years with Cali.
Serendipitous, always. So, Joe, you said you started. You were like one of the first farmers to come out of Cali, right?
Almost. I was up there with Guy and Sam.
Yeah, yeah. So you were kind of like the founders of some of these village farms. So the question I always have, maybe both you guys can chime in, but Joe specifically, why are the farms so important to the villages, and why did Cali come to really cultivate the farms and the farmers throughout the villages? I know you can't really talk about maybe some of the other villages. You can talk about your experience in Port Lions, but I think that you would be a great you would have great insight into kind of like the overview of the village farms in general.
For sure. I can dabble into a little bit of it with the farms and stuff around the island. We're all kind of in the same situation. We all have to get our groceries from on the plane and stuff, or by boat. If it's by plane, sometimes the weather doesn't cooperate and our groceries will sit for numerous days. And then our produce will start to spoil. Anything that's perishable will spoil. So just having farms out here in the villages producing local veggie, fresh veggies every summer is just like a huge, huge game changer. The quality of the produce is top notch. It's way better than anything we would get from in the stores in Kodiak. So having fresh veggies out here every summer, and to add to that too with the hydroponics during the wintertime when it's crucial, has been a really, really a blessing.
So that's kind of been my thesis about the village farms, is that it really is giving the villages more options for their food choices. Would that be correct?
Very correct. Yes. Yeah. A lot of the times before we had the farms, we were used to canned veggies because we couldn't get, you know, fresh veg out here. So we were raised up on canned vegetables. And now that we have fresh veggies for the kids here that are growing up in our village, it's just really amazing. They can come by the farm and grab a fresh strawberry or a fresh carrot or even some broccoli, and then they just eat it right up. So it's really, really a good thing to see. It's really cool.
That's really great. And I'll circle back to that. I'll circle back to some of those crops that you're talking about and how maybe having the village farms has shaped people's dietary habits. But I wanted to ask about why was it so important for Cali to be started to have this kind of a renaissance with food systems in the villages? Because it's not like the food, like farms aren't new in the villages, right? Like it's not something new. But maybe the village farms are maybe a little bit modern. Can you shed some insight onto maybe the reason why Cali thought it would be important to start those village farms, and maybe B, touch on why those food systems are important?
Yeah, and that's something I was going to add on to the background Joe provided on the farms and food security and some of the logistics of getting, you know, fresh food produce up to Kodiak and then getting it out with freight and whatnot to the village communities. But really at the heart of this too is it wasn't Cali, it was really community driven. So it's the heart of Cali is the, you know, started back in I think about 2003 with the community, the Kodiak Rural Regional Forum, just to create more collaboration and communication between Kodiak and the communities around, and bringing, you know, leaders from each community together about 2 to 3 times a year. And that's been going on for coming up on 20 years now. And out of that, back in 2016, a lot of the community members were saying, you know, we used, just going back 2 generations, all of our families had gardens and big gardens, and we used to grow and harvest, and some of the activities are still taking place, but not at the level and abundance that they used to be. So there was kind of this interest in bringing that old way back and some of that practice back. So shifting it a little bit, and has been some focus on the community or the home scale gardens, but it's been more structured as this community oriented and centered farm or garden.
So I'm a farmer here in town. I find that people's food choices beguiling at times when they come up to me and they're just like, oh, I've never had a salad turnip. I'm just going to turn my nose up at it. Is there a little bit of that in the Village Farms now that you've had the farm there for several years? Like, what was it like before? Had you found that maybe now your people are more inclined to try that broccoli, try those vegetables that maybe traditionally haven't been around and available?
Oh, for sure, for sure. You know, growing up out here in Port Lyons, we used to have a community garden, and it was kind of before my time a little bit, before it, you know, kind of just started to fade away into the weeds and stuff. But growing up, it wasn't really used. It was just kind of abandoned, and then finally they tore it down. Growing up, there were some community gardeners, like Max said, but kind of not really at the level that we kind of envisioned. And then, you know, once the funding came available with the forum and everything and the ideas with the powers that be, finally got the farms going. And it took a minute for that initial shift, if that makes sense. But once the pandemic hit, people realized how hard and difficult it was to get fresh veg or even just groceries from Kodiak because the shelves would be empty. So it was kind of like a little bit of a wake-up call for everyone. And since then, I've seen a flourish in personal people's own gardens at home. There was almost like a bolster of people that wanted to start growing their own vegetables and stuff. But you know what? The nice thing is, too, even though that they grow their own, they still support the Port Lyons Farm and buy from the Port Lyons Farm because the Port Lyons Farm grows stuff that they're not growing. So in a way, it kind of balances out and works out. And it's really, really a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think that's important. Like when we're talking about food systems, it's important. Part of that system is individuals growing for themselves a little bit where they can and how they can. Obviously, one person can't grow all their food. So it's important to have those outlets. Joe, why don't you describe the scale of farming you're doing out in Port Lyons? Because it's not a small operation.
And I'd add in jokes sure. and things that are coming online too. And
then yeah. I would say discuss everything that's happening over at Port Lyons at the scale that you guys are currently at, and that the scale that you guys are going to be at here shortly.
Okay, so our farm here in Port Lyons is like just under a half acre, and we have two hoop houses going at the moment. We're building two more, another 48 foot, and then we'll build a 72 footer, a really long one. We have 60 chickens at the moment, but we're also building a brand new chicken coop. It's almost complete, and it's going to be built for a capacity of 200 chickens, but we're only going to run them at 100. And the theory behind that is the chicken coop has two separate bays for their coop area. And then once this one side is getting kind of dirty, we'll shift them over to the clean side. So it'll kind of be like a rotation, a monthly rotation to keep the coops clean. And it'll be way easier to manage them that way. We have two hydroponic cabinets. They're a capacity of 115 plants, and those are mainly used for leafy greens and herbs and stuff. And then countless other buckets of hydroponics going for cucumbers, tomatoes, peppers, all within a tiny little seedling shack. But just after the pandemic really hit, we had a Fognak Native Corporation came up to the farm and really asked us what the farm would really need to be in full production or sustainable, because they had a bunch of CARES Act money they needed to spend down. And we decided to build a hydroponic farm. And what I mean by a hydroponic farm is they build these 40-foot containerized hydroponic units that really can produce out a lot of veg, up to like 12,000 lettuces a year type deal. But we wanted to go outside the box of the ordinary of just doing leafy greens. We wanted to also be able to produce vine crops hydroponically, like cucumbers, tomatoes, peppers, peas, beans, all the vine crops. In total, we have 2 vine crop containerized units that'll be full of bubbler buckets and Dutch buckets for vine crops. 1 leafy greens conics for doing lettuces and herbs. And then they also build a, what's called a processing conics, which is like a kitchen, stainless steel DEC approved kitchen. And that processing unit also has a spin washer and spin dryer for different types of vegetables. There'll be storage in there. There'll be an ice maker. There'll be some refrigeration and also an egg scrubbing unit for cleaning our fresh chicken eggs. So that's like the total of the whole hydroponic farm. We're also getting these storage units that are kind of modular. You kind of, you know, they send them to you and you just put them together. They're like 20-foot conexes almost, and they're CoolBot controlled. It'll be for any kind of produce we grow. We're also doing seed saving too. We're on grant for saving our own seeds, and that'll be our seed bank as well.
Yeah, and how many people are on hand at this half acre with 4 Connex stations, hydroponic stations, going to be soon to be 4 hoop houses, up to 100 chickens maintaining? How many people are working there?
So this summer, there's 5 people working there, but full time, they have the farm manager and the assistant. And what's nice about the summertime is there's internships and positions available for teenagers or young adults to come to work for the farm during the summer. But tribes will be looking to hire actually 2 assistants instead of just 1. So there'll be 3 full-time employees running that farm.
Yeah, that's an amazing feat for just tree people full-time, taking all that on, because those hoop houses, man, they are a lot of work.
Yes, lots of work, yeah. But they are also amazing.
They are absolutely amazing. Max, why don't you tell me, or tell the audience, basically, how all these village farms are connected? Because, I mean, they really are separate entities, because they're, if I have an understanding of how they're operated, they're all operated slightly different, they're all funded slightly different, but they've all connected through a common interest, right?
Yeah, that common interest to, you know, starting at the forum, and that's where, Joe, you would know, but that's, you know, first grant, the A&A grant, that was probably the birth of Luc de Crone, correct?
Yes, our first A&A grant, that was the birth of Luc de Crone.
Yeah, why don't you talk about Luc de Crone? Because I talk to people about Luc de Crone and the village farms, and they're just like, what? The villages have farms? Like, they're just absolutely oblivious to it. And I think that's just a darn shame.
Yeah, so jumping back to that first grant, I think that was, you know, I wasn't around at Cali at the time, but the idea that we have all the communities that are interested in this common goal of producing more local food. And I don't know, you know, if it was from that vision, but also from a funding perspective of creating some unity on this collaborative effort, and providing some sort of structure for everybody to grow and learn together. So that's where Luc de Crone was born, that these, you know, all the produce is, these are all, you know, communities of Luc de heritage. And so that's where that ties in. And, having the idea that it is kind of one of the first, we say, Alaska Native farming collectives in a way, even though it's not, you know, official, but just this collection of, you know, tribally owned and operated farms or community owned and operated, that are all working together towards that common goal, and allows for, you know, from a funding perspective is great too, because allowing to have different workshops and events and supplies and whatnot that can help support everybody, And out of there too, they've been we as Cali have been supporting Eluctic Grown. So that's where a lot of times those that do know about the farms will hear of Eluctic Grown just as this kind of our brand and our vision, as we say. But that does encompass all the community owned farms. And then Cali is its own entity and just supports this Eluctic Grown initiative and collective. So Cali is separate than Eluctic Grown and just provides a lot of the technical support and funding. Not for personnel too. It's really just the funding for training and whatever the farms need and want too. So yeah, so that's kind of some of the history of how Eluctic Grown has come to be. And through that and some recent, another ANA grant that actually got into the hydroponics as a way to expand into year-round production. So started with soil farming and started to get that going and learning about how to build your soil and what it takes to grow on Kodiak in Alaska. Figured out, you know, we have a really limited and short growing season. So how can we grow at least a limited variety of products, leafy greens and herbs mainly, and get into vine crops in the wintertime. And through that grant, that also funded a food hub. So that was becoming popular as a model for distribution kind of around the country and has continued to grow just as a way to really connect producers directly to consumers and make it more efficient for people to market their products and kind of integrate the e-commerce aspect to a little bit, which come out of COVID, a lot of people are more familiar with.
Yeah, it seems like COVID really put things onto the computer so that you can just stay at home, order, and then it'll just show up on your doorstep or what's not. You've got what, five village farms, right?
Yeah.
And my farm, who contributes to the food hub, but it's not like a traditional food hub though, is it? I can't get produce from, let's say, Larson Bay off the food hub, right? Cause I'm here in Kodiak. It's mainly focused on each community, right? Electronically, basically like an electronic farmer's market. Is that
correct? Yeah, that's the way that I usually talk about it.
Okay.
It's like an electronic farmer's market and some cool ideas of like pre-ordering and making it really simple for the whole idea is really so the producer or the farmer can just focus on growing.
Yeah.
And not have to worry as much as about marketing and spending time at marketing and outreach and have this one platform and outlet. But it's definitely adapted and evolved over the years. You know, the initial idea that we're going to have this e-commerce market and it was set up so each community could have their own ordering period, their own little online marketplace, but you could also connect them. But it's still difficult. You know, this Starlink just came on more recently too, and integrating online e-commerce platforms and communities where, you know, there's limited access to internet a lot of times with connectivity issues.
And the island itself isn't very well integrated with itself, right? Like we can't, like we're not particularly integrated. We've only got, what, 65 miles of road system.
Exactly.
And we can't get to any of the other villages by car. The only way to get there is by plane, which is extremely expensive if you're talking about freight,
mm-hmm.
And by boat, which is extremely slow and also very expensive for fuel. So I think as far as the food hub is concerned, it's a great the way that you guys have set it up is absolutely brilliant, where it's just very focused on – it's like hyper-local. And I wanted to ask you, Joe, how has the food hub changed the way people purchase and acquire their food from the farms in Porch Lines?
Sure. Like Max said, it was kind of just like a online farmer's market. There's set days for when we harvest, and there's also set days for when we distribute the produce to the community. The way we did the food hub out here is we kind of had like a pickup location because the farm doesn't have its own vehicle to use for distribution. So kind of like we set it up for farmers market days. There was a little table off to the side where people could pick up their food hub orders. And that's for people that, you know, if they wanted to, you know, come up to the farmers market themselves and buy produce, or they could just go online and order their produce online and then just pick it up there too. I've seen a lot of people use the food hub here, mainly kind of like the younger generation, the elders would kind of had a little bit of a difficulty using the software and stuff, but it was nice having Danielle, our other Cali employee, she's our bookkeeper and stuff, cross-trained a lot of our elders out here how to use the software, and anybody else that was having difficulties using the software and the online store. So having these people to work with and being able to get the products out there to the community a lot more easier is then crucial for Port Lions.
Yeah, as a producer, I can say that's the there are some serious advantages to the food hub system. One of them being is that you don't have to overharvest or underharvest. You get your pick order from the food hub, tells you which is already what's been bought, what's been purchased, what needs to be harvested, and you just go out there and harvest it on Tuesday, and it gets delivered on Wednesday. It's a brilliant plan. And it seems like you guys in Fort Lyons, and I don't, maybe this is what the rest of the village farms do. You guys kind of sister that with your weekly farmer's market at the farm?
Correct.
Yeah. And do you find that the food hub has kind of changed that person to farmer interaction that you normally would have gotten at the farmer's markets?
Funny that you mentioned that. It actually kind of worked hand in hand for us out here, at least, having the food hub table right next to the market. The people still had to come up to the market to come grab their stuff. And so there was still that, you know, personal interaction. You know, people would come up and, you know, visit with us for a little bit, and there would be other people buying stuff too. But yeah, having the food hub table right at the farm next to the market on market days, it kind of, there was no real difference at all in seeing people showing up for the markets, the farmers markets. So in a way, kinda, but you know, having that table there next to the market, you're still able to have that interaction with them. So
yeah, I think that's a brilliant way of doing it. So Joe, before I let you off the hook here and let you get back to whatever job you've got to get back to, what would you like people to know about how to support the island farms, number one, and what would you like to see farming look like? Maybe you could speak on to Port Lyons specifically, but farming in general in Kodiak.
You know, obviously I'd like to see our village farms succeed and thrive and expand too, because, you know, farming never stops. But what I want to see, not just particularly in Port Lyons, but kind of like island-wide or even statewide or even worldwide. Just I want to see people more bolstered, more excited to grow stuff. You know, it's kind of like we lost our culture on how to provide for ourselves by the land. You know, there's hunting and there's, you know, gathering and stuff, but there's no actual growing really being practiced. But, you know, having Cali and all this funding opportunity, and then even statewide, seeing the bolstering of local food production, gardening, in the future, I'd really like to see, you know, once I drive down the road, I see people, you know, tending to the gardens, whether that be small or however big they want to make it on their properties. But, you know, we get people that come by the farm, and not just particularly on farmers market days, but just to come take a tour of the farm and everything. And they're asking us all these questions, and, you know, we're not trying to keep anything secret, like, you know, like most big time businesses and stuff would do. We're more of like a collaborative effort in getting the info out there for people to know, because knowledge is power. If they don't know, then how can they provide for themselves? So anytime they're up there, they're asking questions, we, you know, we tell them, this is how it works, this is what you do, this is how you do that, you know, the whole nine yards. Over time, we'll see more and more gardens coming up, probably. That's what I think, because we're already seeing it now. We're seeing, just in over the past 5 years, probably in this town particularly, there's been 10 more personally owned gardens on people's properties. The lodge I work at is one of them. They kind of got lucky there with me, because I have all this knowledge and experience. So I've been helping them with their greenhouses and their flower gardens and stuff, and just in general too with the public. If anybody has questions with a tree they have, or flowers, or if they're starting a garden, they come in, pick my brain, and I don't see that stopping anytime soon. Maybe not the rate I want to see, but I see it happening. So that's what really matters, is actually seeing people taking in the knowledge and everything that I'm trying to teach them and actually putting it into action. So it's been a really beautiful thing, and I envision it seeing it being stronger.
I like those points you made. But I also want to point out, you're a first-generation farmer, correct?
Correct.
And I believe that most of the village farm managers and farmers are first-generation farmers, right? And they are doing amazing things with the amount of resources that have been invested in them. They're taking those investments and paying dividends in their community, so to speak. So, Joe, you're not only a farmer, you're doing a great community service for your tribe and for your community there in Port Lions. And I want to thank you for coming up and speaking with us.
For sure.
Where can people find you if they want to get a hold of you?
Okay. If anybody wants to get a hold of me anytime, my email is joecuin.cali@gmail.com. Or you can reach me at my cell phone number, 907-942-2615. And I want to say one last thing before I take off, to add to your point earlier about the visioning of the farms around the island and stuff. You know, it's kind of tough sometimes. It's a lot of work. But the reward of growing your own produce and having that knowledge and skill set is kind of the essence of what you need to be able to provide for yourself. And I keep saying that the more people that know, the better off we all are. So I encourage people to give it a shot. Even if you're afraid to kill some plants, I've done it plenty of times. Being a farmer, you're not going to save every plant. It's going to happen. And I just encourage people to give it a shot and see what you think. I mean, the aura of growing your own plants and tending to your garden is in a way very therapeutic. So I encourage people to try it.
Yeah, Joe, I always say to people the road to being a great farmer is paved with many, many dead plants.
Just means you haven't mastered your skills.
Yeah.
Because you're killing plants. You got a long ways to go. You'll never master it.
But on the other side, Max, your job specifically is to integrate those systems. And you call yourself a sustainable food systems catalyst. So being a catalyst, what do you want to see happen in Kodiak to make it to bolster those food systems? Because as Joe was saying earlier, that, you know, we are habitually without cargo ships coming in. Like we get skipped quite frequently, and it seems like it's happening more and more, like more frequently since I've lived here. And we are off the road system. Like we're not on the road system. So in a lot of ways we're fortunate to have the systems that we have with the food systems, but we also are vulnerable in a lot of ways. So what would you like to see Kodiak do more of in terms of bolstering its food systems?
Yeah, it's a good question. Joe definitely touched on a good chunk of it. So just to add on to that, I'd say, I think just that the participation, really, and that's where, whether you're growing or harvesting or sharing or anything in there related to food systems, you don't necessarily need to be gardening. There's other ways you can go out and collect berries, or like fishing or hunting, or just creating salves and other ways that you're contributing to this food system network. And I think that's really the heart of the farms too. It's like they're we're a long ways off on Kodiak from producing enough food to, you know, produce and protein to fill everybody's freezer, feed everybody. We might be good on the protein. We need to work on the sharing part. But especially on the produce. So it's like the farms are chipping away at it and they're trying, but really serving, I think, is inspiration too for the communities and for the region, that it can be done. And if we all, you know, contribute in some way, whether that is supporting the local producer or producing a little more yourself or getting out there and just connecting with nature more and harvesting and trying to localize some more of your food inputs, I think all of that helps. Like the more that, because it is at the heart of it, I think it's a movement. And that's something that I realized the longer that I've been in this, is it's not just you get in there, you produce a lot of food and everybody's fed. It's a lot more complex than that. And part of that's, we're doing, you know, cooking workshops and recipes. And
yeah, that's kind of one of those things. It's like, it's one thing to, like, I think growing the food is the easiest part, right?
Yeah,
so the next part, you got to, like, distribute it. I find that the hardest part is to sell it.
Yeah.
Like, trying to convince people that the beet is good for you. You've got to eat the beet. Or you've got to eat the Swiss chard or something. Like, sometimes people have, food is kind of one of those intimate things that it's just, like, you have a relationship with it. And everyone has a different relationship with it. And it's just like, as a farmer, you have to like cater to those needs. And it's not always spot on. But it does present, like, that's the difficult the point is, like, you have to, there, you know, it reminds me of the time I was at the farmer's market selling produce. And I had, you know, it was mid-year, so we just had a plethora of stuff. And, you know, a fella came by and he was just like, I don't know what any of this is. And it was just like, it was, you know, what I thought was normal is not necessarily what's normal for everyone else. So I think, do you see that as part of your job as to present the food in a way that's palatable for people?
Yeah, no, that's definitely a piece of the puzzle. And connecting even, we've working more with the Elders Meals Program and school meals, and that's a piece too. Some people are, you know, more likely to eat things that first they're familiar with and already eating, and then second that maybe are prepared in certain ways, or that, you know, it's definitely a puzzle in reaching out to people. And
yeah, you guys have told me some interesting ways to get people to eat the food, eat some of the food.
And having little pesto parties and like getting excitement around what's being grown, and also the feedback on like what should be grown or what needs to be harvested more, and maybe what species aren't growing like they used to be or aren't as abundant. And that reminds me too, the other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, I mentioned the participation, I think, in whichever capacity people are able to, and contribution, but also more community is a big one. And that's something I've started tying into some of the work we've been doing in workshops and outreach, is the idea that, like, we shouldn't be going to the grocery store alone as much, more markets. We shouldn't be all cooking for ourselves and eating alone, more community meal sharing, and really trying to create more of a network around food. Not only how we grow, how we eat it, how we, you know, purchase it, or just all the whole network around food. And that would be another beautiful thing to see.
Wow, that'd be that's you're talking about changing the culture of a lot of people.
Yeah, well, I think people are open to change right now. Unless we're all happy and eating great food and the world is going beautifully, I think we're open to some growth and change. So we'll see where it goes.
So, Joe, we're going to sign off here shortly. But what's in the future for Porch Lions Farm?
Oh man, so the future of Porch Lions Farm, it's really going to be all about running that hydroponic farm, and from there, I think, you know, the tribes really wants to look into more property they own. They might want to try and do some like local ranching, you know, with like some pigs and some cattle and stuff, and other kinds of stuff, meat birds. So they might try to do that here in the near future. We're also trying to get our mariculture going here in Port Lions. We don't really have someone to run that at the moment. There might be an opportunity soon for somebody to run the kelp farming out here in Port Lions and get that going. We also want to try and do clam gardens and maybe even oyster gardens too. But as far as like the gardening perspective, the soil farming, I'm not sure if the tribe wants to expand the soil farm. I think they're really just focusing on filling out what's already there, and we're pretty much getting close to that goal with the two hoop houses we're installing, and that just leaves a little bit of outdoor space for us to grow as well. Stuff outdoor doesn't really grow as well as it does inside the hoop house here, so we really tried to jam pack our farm with greenhouses, and I think we might also do low tunnels too in those outdoor areas, just because we get so much rain here. We really want to be able to control how much watering and water our plants get, and then also trying to bolster the heat for them. The warmthness of the greenhouses, I think, is key for growing up here in Alaska. But the things I mentioned, the hydro farm, the soil farm will kind of be like where it is, and then the tribes might want to try getting into ranching and meat production, and then also trying to get all our kelp farm going. That's already in place.
Brilliant. Enough work to have five lifetimes.
Yeah, we'll have American, we'll have right? an ocean farm yeah. talk next time, and then ranching after that.
That'd be great. So, Max, before we also sign out, what's in the future for Cali, and what do you think is the future for Kodiak Food Systems that you see?
Yeah, I think from Cali's perspective, continuing to support, you know, the village farms and food production, whatever capacity we can and that they want us to. But on that note, too, it seems like it's shifting a little bit, too, to kind of breathe this energy into the mariculture and ocean farming area. Because a big thing on Kodiak is building soil. So that takes time. And kind of we've done a lot of work over the last almost decade on all the details of how you farm here and what needs to be done. It seems like at the end of the day, it takes people and it takes time. And some of those things you can't, no matter all the resources you throw into it, you need people and time.
For me, at least, it takes about 3 years to get a bed into like tip-top shape.
Exactly. So that's right now all the farms have their projects that they're working on and slowly expanding in this area or that each year. So I think, and they have a huge support network now too of their tribes and their corporations and communities, something that wasn't as strong when this started back in, 2015 or so or earlier. So I think definitely pivoting too and we're looking more into clam gardening and oysters and kelp and other ways to produce, local regenerative economies, because that's really the heart of Cali too, is supporting the long-term sustainability of the coastal communities. And it's interesting that, fishermen might become farmers up here, and just ways that we can still be connected to the water and use the knowledge and resources, expertise people have up here, connection with the ocean, into a new industry that can maybe support communities and families. So tying that all together too, to support local, food systems and food security, and hopefully, jumping back to the food hub, we have it set up now. So it's really overflow that comes in from the food hub. So then that's a sign of success. That means hopefully everybody in the community has had access or, availability to that produce, and that's excess that wasn't consumed. So then it can come in here before it spoils. And so just seeing more sales into Kodiak from the communities too means that's a good sign that a lot is being produced there. And just more involvement by everybody coming back to that.
Excellent. Well, thank you too again so much for stopping by and taking the time out of your day and talking to me and talking to Kodiak about part of this podcast is really to highlight what's going on in Kodiak, but also to couple that with trying to get the word out there and to get more support for farmers and farming and agriculture in general. I'm hoping that having these conversations will spur that, continue the movement towards, buying more locally sourced food, however that looks like, because it's not always, not everyone can grow. I understand not everyone can produce food, but at least they might be able to support it with their dollars And so I think a lot of this conversation is trying to support that kind of that network of people. So
yeah. And we might have resources on alooptogrown.com people are interested in, or
Why don't you tell me how to get a hold of you and what people can look at too?
Yeah, probably alooptic, alooptigrown.com. That's the best place to learn about the food hub, resources for growing, our contact information.
So and you can find out all about the Village Farms as well.
Yep, that's all the farms page is telling about their journey and what they're up to.
Cool. Food systems are difficult to build out regardless of where it is, but Kodiak has a unique set of challenges that, after talking with Max and Joe, shows what is possible when you invest in people. 10 years ago, Cali, in its nascent stage, helped build the Village Farms to what they are today. It goes to show how local supports, from buying local produce to building hoop houses, helps spur innovation, builds a resilient farm, and helps fill people's refrigerators when barges skip us. Listen to all the episodes of Talks Around a Farm Table on KMXT.org and Spotify. This show is in collaboration between Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District and KMXT Radio. You can find me, Ian Zacher, on Facebook at Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District or on the web at www.kodiaksoilandwater.org. Music featured in this episode is Boil the Breakfast by The Chieftains, which is my son's favorite song.